students join the school India at 75, they will look for a job India at 100.
Right.
Where will India be? What kind of podcast or modcast or doctor cast you are going to do?
Right.
Which way India will go? Where will technology go? Where will these revolutions, AI, ChatGPT, augmented reality take you?
Welcome to the Learning Circle, the ultimate video podcast for educators and parents who want to unleash the full potential of children. Join us as we explore the fascinating world of learning with the help of thought leaders who will share their knowledge and stories with us. This is your host Kavleen Kaur, and I'm excited to take you on this journey. Get ready to be inspired, informed, and entertained. So without further ado, let's jump right into this captivating conversation. Brace yourself for a thought-provoking exploration of the frontiers of education right here on The Learning Circle. Hello everyone, our guest today is Colonel Shekhar, who is an eminent educationist. Welcome to our show, sir.
Thank you so much, Kavleen. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, sir, for us. So you have diverse experience in education and before that in the defense sector. I would request you to please introduce yourself for our audience.
Right, I'll try and make it as short as we can. I spent 22 years in the Army as an Army Educational Corps officer. And now I'm into my 15th year in the civilian space as an educational leader. I've been part of Sainik schools, military schools, army schools, Kendriya Vidyalayas, colleges. As part of my profession in the army, post 2009, I've headed schools, I've headed vocational institutions, executive director of colleges. Presently, I'm the principal of the Hyderabad Public School in Kadapa, Andhra Pradesh. I have a wife and two daughters. My wife also heads a school here in Bangalore.
Thank you for sharing that, sir. So, to begin the discussion, you have spent a lot of time in the education sector in defense. So, my first question would be that how has that experience influenced you as an educator, and what are some of the practices that you brought to the civil education system here?
Right, that's a good question. Firstly, I'll look at the big picture. In the armed forces, trust is paramount. We automatically trust people unless proved otherwise. That's the first thing we do in the army.
Right.
Yeah. Shekhar is an officer, captain, major, lieutenant colonel, colonel, whatever it is, we trust him unless he proves otherwise. When you come out of the armed forces, the first thing is, are yaar aaya to hai, let's see, wo thoda karke dikhaye. So that instinctive trust we get in the armed forces is not necessarily here when you come into the civilian space. Secondly, in the army, generally, you avoid what we call passive resistance. Passive resistance means, like for example, if my wife is upset with me, she will come and give me a glass of water, she'll plonk it there and show her face, which is a cross between Durga and Cleopatra. In the armed forces, once a decision is taken, we would have our arguments, discussions, and you'll be surprised. The amount of openness we have is much more than the civilian space. There we are allowed to question, argue, discuss. But once your leader takes a decision, we all follow it in letter and spirit. In the third aspect, when you come into the civilian space, there is much more in terms of politics. There is this person, that person. The armed forces generally is comparatively politics free, although all of us have our set of challenges. Coming down to the civilian space, where you have a large number of students from various strata of society, it's a much more diverse space, very, very diverse space. And you'll meet real Indians who have their own respective challenges, you are much more closer to society. And further, in the armed forces, when you stay there for 2 or 3 years, you tend to have limitations of doing the kind of reforms you want to do. You are moving every 3, 4, 5 years. In a civilian space, once you are there, you can succeed in having long-term vision policy and work it through till the end.
Right, right.
Would be the major differences. Once you ask follow-up questions, I'll answer you more.
Right. So, as I understand, sir, there are, some good points which you think the army sector has in terms of trust and, not showing passive resistance once the decision has been made, less politics. But also there is a problem of not being able to implement long-term changes because of the way it is structured. So which changes you can possibly do in the civil sector more efficiently?
And you spend more time there. I spent in Atul Vidyalaya 8, 8.5 years.
Right.
So you can take through the transformation to an extensive level.
Right. The first two points which you mentioned, trust and lack of passive resistance. So these are, I think, two skills which are very important to be developed in children also. Right. So having these abilities, I think, would be very beneficial for them, whichever career they chose later on. So I guess you must be, along with the regular subjects that you are teaching, you must be guiding your teachers to work on these aspects also.
Most definitely. The challenge where it happens is, see, when you're in the armed forces, wherever you are, say I'm in a military school. It's a residential school, CBSE. I'm in a Sainik school. It's a residential school. So they have a vision. It's very clear. They have to join the armed forces. When you come into a civilian space, if it's a new school, it's a different story. When you come in, you are already welcomed. There was one example where when I joined a school, one of the senior teachers came. He asked me, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 33. Then he said, "Sir, my son is 27. The basic message is you sit down here. I'm senior to you. I know what to do."
Right.
That's one part of the story. Second is, once civilian staff are trained and made to understand, they give you the same kind of support and follow-up. You require to do it differently because after all, at the end of the day, we are Indians. The passive resistance part tends to be on the higher side, but you have to work around it. So if you look at students also, to give you an example, some of my 10th standard students, all of them wanted to go to a particular place, but their parents were having questions about it. So when we tell them, "Bhai, you have to come, this is an educational tour," the students would say, "Sir, you send a message saying that the tour is compulsory." They wouldn't be comfortable telling their parents this is required. It should come as an order from the principal, which makes it easier for them. So there is also this attempt to avoid confrontation.
Right.
We are very good at avoiding. I'll tell you, Kavleen, you are a great person, etc. But over WhatsApp, I would send a message, "What a silly interview you conducted." So now we are into that world where we always want to keep everyone comfortable and happy.
Right.
My belief in schools, definitely, when a student joins the school in 2023, he or she is going to look for a job India at 100. Students join the school India at 75, they will look for a job India at 100.
Right.
Where will India be? What kind of podcast or modcast or doctor cast you are going to do?
Right.
Which way India will go? Where will technology go? Where will these revolutions, AI, chat, GPT, augmented reality take you? Next time Credo Learnings is going to have a podcast with me. Will Kavleen be speaking from the moon, courtesy Elon Musk? So
right.
How do we define it that way? That would be presently, as a school leader, my thinking, my challenge, and often my worries.
Right. Yeah, those worries are very real, because it has always been that future has always been unpredictable, but now the rate of change is unprecedented. It is too fast now. So that is, of course, that plays more responsibility on the educators to have a holistic education wherein we prepare the children for whatever they may face tomorrow, right? So, we have talked about worries, and we've also talked about, some of the responsibilities. But what has been the most satisfying part of being an educator for you?
Easy. Students coming back and saying, sir, that day you fired me up. Today, I am an officer, I am a leader, I have done MBA, I have done this. Thank you, sir, for making me what I am.
Right. Yeah.
The most moving was, I had been to the National Defense Academy. Students did not know that I had gone there.
Mm.
It was maybe a couple of years after I left the military school. Suddenly, out of the blue, some 20 students landed up. They had their workouts, etc. They were tired. They were dripping all over their bodies with all kinds of sweat. But they somehow came to know that their former principal is here. And with that mud, they touched my feet and said, sir, you made us what we are today. Absolutely moving.
Right.
When you go across, meet teachers, they say, sir, you are a tough principal, but I am a principal here today because of you. So in terms of the fulfillment, Kavliness, you get it almost every day. Some student will come up, or we have been trying to make students speak better languages. A second standard student pushes open my office door and comes up and says, sir, you had promised us 2 periods of games because we did a good assembly. You have not given it to us. Yes. Second standard child, not even 2 feet, nothing, pushing open the door. So there you find that the children trust you. They also believe that despite being strict, they can ask you. So that way, it's an everyday affair. And I also believe that this podcast, you reaching out to me saying, sir, I think you have something good to say, is also a fulfillment of what we try to do over the last few years.
Yes, definitely, sir. I think your students are blessed to have you as a guide. And I also, looked at your work and wanted to speak to you to gain your perspective on various things. So today we are talking on multiple things. There are, when I started doing this interview, I started with a few particular subjects, but then I thought there are so many other things that I would be talking about. So today we'll be touching, briefly on multiple subjects, and probably later on we can have another round on one specific topic. So thanks for sharing all that, sir. Now coming on to a very important topic. There has been a lot of discussions on this, the NEP that we have, right? So we have talked about the times are challenging, the rate of change is very fast. So now there has been some time since NEP 2020 came out. What according to you has been an impact so far? I know such big policies and implementation takes time, but do you see the wheel moving, any changes which has started, happening in the schools?
Oh, yes. Now, 2 terms. President Nixon, the American president, always said that if he kicks the American bureaucratic beast, the kick will have its impact 18 to 24 months later.
Right.
Or we always say, the Indian elephant takes time to start moving, but when the elephant starts moving, the pace is very fast. So first important point, the NEP has started a discussion.
Mm.
As a nation, we are discussing education, with well over 56% of our nation below the age of 30. what we call the demographic dividend. Three, the huge, huge effort put into NEP 2020. I happened to do a similar interview with Dr. Kasturi Rangan with some of my students. The humility of the man, the way he prepares. And there was one another anecdote. People who have been working for NEP 2020 and the NCFs. So they were all looking around here, there, etc. And finally, Dr. Kasturi Rangan told them, check the Vedas and Upanishads, you will get an answer. And sure enough, they got it. So it is an outstanding broad sweep document. And in that document, if you summarize those 60 odd pages, before we had well over 400 pages, everything right has been said. And I am pleased to see that the committee has really harped on BEd and the poor way BEd is being done. We'll come back to it a little later. So the broad sweep is great. Then we have come up with the National Curriculum Framework for Foundational Learning till grade 2 and the NCF for School Education, the draft has come out. So as far as the quality of the work done, the conversations which we are having, the way we are going, all looks great. However, where do we always falter? Execution.
Right.
Have close to 12 lakh schools in the country. Make it 13, make it 14, make it 15. Let's take broadly about 12 to 13 lakh schools. CBSE is just about 28,000. ICSE is about 3,000. Let's take another 1,000 schools, so-called international IB, etc. So 27 plus 3 plus 1, at best, 32,000-33,000 schools follow the central boards. The real change has to happen in our state board schools. And how does that change happen? When all our teachers feel transformed. We have a large number of single teacher schools, two teacher schools, and we still do not have good schools within that 1-2 kilometer area, the right to education and everyone else states. Make no mistake of it. When India got independence, our female literacy rate was less than 10%. Today, as we celebrate 75, you yourself are a great example as to how women have moved forward. And I'm not being patronizing here. I myself live in a ladies' hostel, my wife, two daughters, both my mothers. We are here and everyone has done a great deal for the society. But along with that, how do we, the Delhi, the Bombays, the Calcuttas, the Madrases, the Bangalores, the Punes, the Hyderabads, that is not where change has to happen.
Right.
It has to happen elsewhere. The same way the Indian cricket team has done, the same way the wrestlers have done. So the tier 2, tier 3 cities, transformation has to happen. Now, we are seeing some green shoots, but we have a long way to go. Because the NEP comes, it comes to the state government, they put it, it's almost always top down. It's rare that we have bottoms up. So when a teacher is told, now, where do you live, Kavlin?
I live in Delhi, sir, New Delhi.
Right, right. In Delhi, if we have to improve the pollution, Arvind Kejriwal has to work with Narendra Modi. We have to have support from Haryana, Punjab, all the other states around you. There has to be less traffic. We have to be more imaginative in working it out. The physics, the chemistry, the biology, the mathematics, the road transport, leadership, politics, everything comes together. It's integrated. If you have to bring it down, you have your challenges. So when we start telling our teachers, please don't teach physics by itself. Please go to the football ground, use a football, use Messi or Ronaldo to give them examples of various theories and laws of physics. It's a challenge. We require to look at it holistically. Second, the reputation and the respect the teacher gets in society. I'm a Fauji. I'm from the armed forces. Both the teacher and the soldier is respected from a distance. Kavlin will give a good salute. Kavlin will do Guru Devo on September 5th. You will have all celebrations. But when we tell our bureaucrats, our elite to put their children as teachers and soldiers, it doesn't happen. So that change which we are looking for is going to be the key before the nation celebrates all of this and makes sure that we are the greatest nation in the world.
Right, right. Those are wonderful points, wonderful points. I really agree that there has to be an integrated approach. It cannot work in silos, and until and unless we reach tier 2, tier 3 cities, we cannot really say that there has been much impact, because the metros anyways have always been exposed to the best in the world globally. Right, the parents are also educated, they travel abroad and bring the best technologies and education, even if the school is not doing it. It's only in, you know, the these tier 2, tier 3 states, cities that we need focus.
Right? I give you an example. Now, the entire lot of students in my 10th typically go to Akash or any of these coaching classes. There are no questions even asked.
Right.
The parents simply want it to be done. So I'm making an initiative slowly but surely. In 5 years, the parents will say, because as I always say, science tells you how to prepare a nuclear bomb. The humanities will tell you why you should not use it.
Right. 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 That's a wonderful thought, sir. And your previous point that you shared towards the end of your discussion, that, you know, very few parents would want their children to enter into a teaching field as against the other field, is also valid. If I can be honest here, education, being a teacher, was not my first preference also. It's only when I became a parent and I realized how children learn and how critical it is, you know, then this mind shift happened, that perhaps this is the, if I can say, noble or one of the profession which can have the biggest impact on the world.
I get you, Kavlin, but you know, nobility is all fine. Maybe 20, 25 years earlier, the teacher was bringing additional income to the family. I've heard several husbands talking to their wives, "Your salary is what I pay as tax." Very nasty comment.
Right.
Post the early 2000s, things have changed. One, aspirations are higher. Two, cost of living has gone up. Three, it is the woman's salary which goes into EMI. Let's be very clear about it. So what the teacher does, and this has been one of my pet peeves, the teacher is a mother first, a daughter-in-law second, spouse third, then in her spare time she is a teacher. So the whole concept mentally, if the teacher doesn't reach home by 3 o'clock, the mother-in-law climbs up Mount Everest without oxygen. She gets angry, annoyed, all kinds of stuff happens. But we are watching it daily.
Yes.
So the societal priority is thoda paisa bana do yaar, lekin family priority one. But my request overall, and wherever I go, I say it, give it equal space. Your family, your children, please give it, but please give 50% of your time also there. So what necessarily we have to change beyond NEP is the mindset. Carol Dweck talks about the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. Presently, we have a very fixed mindset as to what a teacher has to do, especially in tier 2, tier 3 towns, and even in tier 1. I am quite sure that some of us are lucky, our spouses support us. You have to prepare your breakfast, and there have been many online comments. When online classes were going on, students used to tell the teacher, "Madam, aapke pressure cooker ka 5 seati ho gaya. You have to switch it off." So,
right, sir.
That entire picture has to change. So when I meet a large number of teachers and I do take workshops all over, when this question comes up, if you see, when you have an extra workshop beyond 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, before, beyond the normal time which we follow, the teacher is like a cat on a hot tin roof. There are a million things waiting for her when she goes back. So how do we get the societies to support her more? We are only interested in her money. We are not necessarily willing to support her. 80% of our teachers are women, except a few exceptions. This is the ground challenge. So we have to transform that scenario, Kavli.
That's a very important point, sir. Really, really important. It is not talked much, when we talk about other aspects related to NEP or education in general. But it's a very valid point. And I think the women working in teaching have to be seen at par with other women working in the corporate job, because they are doing equal, if not more important and tougher jobs, because the challenges are also changing with students. Every year new set of students come, and they have, I've realized that teaching has more of a psychological involvement also, because you are dealing with young children. So the teachers have to be in a very good state of mind also, not thinking about the pressures at home. So all these aspects contribute towards their performance.
Definitely. Socio-emotional cultural learning trumps everything else. If you are at home, you have fought with your husband, come back to the school, you enter the school, you are late by 5 minutes. The principal questions you why you are late. You walk into a classroom, the girl who is in standard grade 4, who has not done her science homework because her grandmother has died, will you be polite to the child? The emotions are super important. There is no way. Many a time, I have personally seen, I'm angry. I'm extremely angry, but make a huge effort to calm myself down, because my anger or my losing of emotion, and as such, I'm considered a person who quickly responds, although I recover very fast. It's so much of a challenge when you're going around. And I remember this great story in Reader's Digest earlier. I think it was Mohan Shivanand who wrote it. He was in a flight. He was sitting there. I think it was a Bombay-Delhi flight or a Delhi-Bombay flight. He was sitting there. His co-passenger, he said, "Hello." That guy did not react. So better. Ye apne aap ko samajhta kya hai. I've said hello to him. So pani leke aaya. Normally when you are sitting in 3 seats, pani to karte hai. Then he said, "No, isko karne do. Ye hai, wo hai." Then the flight was landing. It was taxiing. When it was taxiing, that man told him, "My wife has died. Oh. The cremation is going to happen. Can you please allow me to go ahead?"
Right.
And this writer felt like the absolute bits of the world. So our challenge is, one, lack of empathy. I've already told you about trust. Two, a student getting into school at age 3 till the age of 18, he's not an adult, she's not an adult. They change. First, the child is brought to the world, the child is made father and mother friendly, family friendly, preschool friendly, school ready, college ready, job ready, life ready. So till he or she is 18, the moods change almost every day. And if you get into the preteen category nowadays, with all kinds of stuff, with the systems girls go through especially, so on a daily basis, there are mood swings. So emotions matter a great deal, matter not only a great deal, hugely. Learning is most definitely closely connected to your emotions.
So, sir, we have talked about the emotional state of teachers affecting how they teach or how they address the children. So that brings us to the emotional mental health of children. You have already mentioned, briefly touched on that. NEB also focuses on emotional well-being of children. So what changes you see have happened so far, and going forward, what more should be done in this area, both for it is more challenging for our country because we have a diverse population. Especially when we talk about emotions and emotional well-being, the requirements are very different in different sectors. So how do we address these diverse requirements of students? The qualities that we want to develop are same. We want empathy. We want self-awareness. I always feel that, you know, awareness of self is one key aspect that we should teach our children. The qualities we know, but the challenges that students face in their homes are totally different based on various factors. So how do we address this complex scenario?
Great question. I wish I have the right answers for this. The key, as we have seen, is the understanding of the family in a modern context. And this has been made much more difficult because of COVID and post-COVID scenarios. Firstly, the average student is only now getting used to school. Two, students not coming to school, they have lost out on a great deal. Their social connections, their emotional connections, their ability to regulate their own emotions, they're only watching their parents. We have had the longest of shutdowns, 72 weeks.
Right.
A minimum of 40% of learning loss has occurred. Two, parents have started believing that exam passing is just like this. They don't have to study, we give them. So last year and this year, we have found it very difficult to convince parents that your daughter is not as good as the last 2 years' results show you. Three, student absenteeism has gone up. There is a study in the United Kingdom. They have 9 million students. Friday taking off has shot up by about 75%.
Oh.
The psychological importance to regularly attending school has come down.
Hmm.
It's been a challenge. We have pushed it. Now it's only just about now coming down to normal. It's more like the child has gone to the third floor without looking at the first and second floors. The child has jumped up magically like Aladdin and his wonderful lamp. So the child there believes that he is great because he has jumped there. So it's something like an 18-month period for an elephant to give birth, shortened to 6 months.
Mm.
So that is one big aspect. Second is because children have stayed at home, abuse at home has shot up. Huge numbers. Earlier on, it used to be maybe one student in three or four. It is now safely 60% of the students have had physical and mental abuse at home.
That's an alarming situation.
It is alarming, big time alarming. Three, there is an American study which has just come through. 22% of every teenager in the United States has seriously considered suicide. 22%. That means one in five. The American population is 320 million. India student population is 320 million. So firstly, how do we get them back to being normal students? My first answer, make the school normal. Have fun. Make them move around. So the challenge, the parents want only marks, which is always the case, especially in tier 2, tier 3 sounds. My son got 66.7 last time. He has got 64.8. What is the difference? The teacher is responsible. That is one. Second aspect, social media. Many, many children come back and tell me, I hope in my next life, I become my father's mobile. That is the amount of time they spend.
Right.
The students are not given enough time to talk to. Three, most parents, when they come to a particular level, they always want to fire from the school shoulders. Aap bata do. There was an interesting case. The parent came up and said, sir, please do not send homework on WhatsApp, because once the child picks up the phone, he doesn't give back the phone. I said, excuse me, that's your job. Get it back. That tells me about your lack of discipline. And she lost her cool. Sir, I'm telling you, I said, this is happening. There are times when we send it. I'm comfortable with the reading and writing aspect, but there are times when we send it over WhatsApp. But sir, once he picks up the mobile, after a few minutes, he goes into games. I said, lock it up. No, sir, he throws tantrums. So that's the other challenge. We have many parents, double income, single kid, DISC. The children are good at exploiting the guilt traps of the parents. They start demanding. So one, a school has to make sure that every student is treated at par. Two, have regular communication with the parents. Three, make teachers para counselors. No other way. Teachers have to become sensitive, sensible, grounded para counselors. Have regular counselors, and the principal has to take ownership of that aspect. And look, understand, talk to your senior students. From what I have found is that there is a generation gap between the 10th standard student and the 6th standard student. They are not able to mix and match. And finally, integrate the school as one community. Recently, we had Easter, Ramzan, Tamil New Year, and Baba Saheb Ambedkar's birthday together celebrated by the whole school in integrated assemblies. So now suddenly if everyone is together that day and we have these 1 hour outdoor assemblies, students come to the school well before time. They come in various costumes. Parents are there watching it, and that day learning happens much better. So take the student out of the classroom. Let the teacher psychologically come out of the classroom. Make your entire school, wherever you are or even at home, a good learning environment, and be sensitive to what the parents are thinking, including having home visits by teachers to the homes. A long answer, but I think I've covered everything.
Yeah, it may be long, but it is a very crucial point to be discussed. And you have shared points, of course, for the school also, but I see a few points for the parents also about being open to not just the marks that a child is getting, but overall development which is happening. And it's again coming back to this ability to self-reflection. I think the parents also need to develop this ability in themselves so that they know how they are parenting. And the challenges that the teachers may have some training on these aspects, but as parents we don't really get too much of training on these aspects, right? So we every parent has good interest of his or her child at mind, but they don't necessarily have the skills to do so. They may pamper, which may be counterproductive. So
I'll slightly disagree here, Kavleen. We as parents and in schools, I am all for good discipline. Do we differentiate between compliance and discipline? This conversation is enjoyable for both of us because you are listening to me, picking up points from what I say, you have done your research about me, and I am patient to listen to your questions.
Right.
This will happen. There is a time given. We have started on time. You had a lighting thing. We have sorted that out. Now we are talking to each other on various topics.
Right.
At home or in schools today, the teacher wants complete control, or the parent wants complete control. We want compliance, not discipline. That means if a child asks you a question, you don't like it. And, you know, it's a problem now we see much more often. When students come, I take classes, when I tell them, ask me anything, they say, sir, you are the only one asking us to ask questions. All our teachers say, shut up. So I have had complaints from teachers saying, sir, you are allowing them too much freedom. They are asking us too many questions. So the parent does not want questions. The teacher does not want questions. The principal does not want questions. So where does the child go? They have no learning. So either they will rebel over a period of time, or if you see, a pre-primary child will have a million questions. By the time they come to 7th, 8th, padho, books. You have seen that ad which says maths time, teaching time. So what tends to happen is we go for those marks or whatever we say, or we even overschedule them for swimming and running. So the key is, can you have the right balance between what you consider compliance and what you consider discipline? Your discipline is there when the student says, sir, why are you starting the school at 7 o'clock? When I say, okay, I will start the school at 7:30, no games for you. In Kadapa, the temperatures can go up to 45 already. If you want to play, we come at, agreed, sir, we'll come at 7. Then they say, sir, can we start at 6:30? We want to play for 1 hour. Then I tell them, our teachers cannot come by 6:30. Let's make it 7:10. The teacher understands, the student understands. So how do we bring that? And of course, the leader is responsible for decision making. Sometimes you'll have to tell them because they may not have the maturity. So the key is, is the parent willing to listen to his son or daughter, or does he or she bully them? I'm afraid bullying is more the cause rather than anything else.
Yeah, that is an absolute wonderful point. And, you know, if I can share, that is the way, that is, if one aspect of my parenting, I would say it is just that for my son, he's going to be 8. I always tell him that, you know, don't do something because we tell you to do. Just ask question, be convinced, ask logical question. And if whatever we are saying appeals to your logical mind, then you do it, and if it doesn't, then come and ask more questions, right? And you know, most often than not, I would not say 100%, but a big number of times, he himself comes up with the, you know, logical thought about why I am being asked to do such things, and then there are no tantrums. So that approach is the one, because you are developing students, a child's agency also of self-reflection, of thinking logically. And this doesn't happen when he's doing maths or science or any other subject. It happens more in day-to-day activities. That's
and on the ground, sports.
Yes, on the ground, sports.
Ball, he goes along with them, kicks, pushes, agrees to the referee, disagrees. At the end of it, we tell them, hug each other. 3 cheers for the opposite team, come back, you win, you lose, you get that into it.
Yes.
That
yes.
becomes, you know, we have to accept. So the importance of character building is so important, even more so outside, definitely not more so when he or she only watches the father or the mother or the grandparent.
Right, right. So that brings us logically to the next question I had, which was on Socratic questioning. I think that is one way of developing this ability to think, to question, to self-reflect. So what do you think is the usage or benefit of implementing this approach in school, and how best to implement it, given that it also has some challenges? The teachers may also not be trained on it. Overall, what do you think about this this technique, and how to go about it in a right manner?
I would not even go into the technique. Any option is welcome. The Socrates method is good. I have no issues with that. What I normally look at is the right conversation happening? The key to everything you do at the end of the day is context. Contextually, how do you do it? There will be a classroom where the child will not express anything in a maths class. Bring him out to a sports field, she will be your best referee. Take the child out to the arts room, the quietest child will paint the best of pictures. The challenge is, one, we all like, I've always said, the army is less rigid, a school is more rigid. Ghanti baj gayi andar jana hai, ghanti baj gayi ghar jana hai. Especially in a city like Delhi.
Right.
So within that system, almost all teachers would claim that syllabus, which is a load of nonsense. Nobody tells us what to teach till grade 8. We all have what is to be done. We can do it. So firstly, the bigger challenge, are the teachers ready to be questioned? And I have basically 5 important terms which I say teachers should have. I do not know. I am sorry. I will check and get back to you. Gratitude. I apologize.
Oh.
Watch any school, watch any place, any school. The ego of the teacher in the classroom is huge. Inside the classroom, I do not know bolne mein bahut pareshani hum sabko. It has taken me a lifetime to tell my teachers apologizing is a virtue. I've done it publicly in the assembly. Slowly they are picking up. So the challenge in all questioning, right, wrong, etc., is how much legitimate space you can give, how well you are able to say I do not know, and mix and match students when they are conversing. So my definition of a good school is when your child who is most shy, child who is physically challenged, mentally challenged, is absolutely confident of coming onto the assembly stage and speaking with staccato bursts or with hesitation or making mistakes. So how do we bring the entire concept into a school where these systems are in place? Presently, any kind of dialogue between the student and the teacher is dominated by the teacher. The teacher tends to control everything. My last point regarding a good school is, in a good school, the students run the school. The basic discipline, coming, going, khana, pina, washroom. The teachers mentor the students. Right? The senior students mentor the junior students. The principal mentors the teachers. And the board, the trust board or the governing council, mentors the principal contextually. So anything we do, whether you use the term, I'll give you an example. Whenever we say English language is fascinating, I wrote somewhere today on LinkedIn why so many mistakes are happening. I said WhatsApp University, Google University, and our wonderful disassociation with truth. That means I'm Jude Bolre. Correct? Mm-hmm. So in that way, in a modern world where students are very much into technology, gadgets, etc., using any method, Socrates or otherwise, encouraging them to think, reflect, and ask questions is the key. There was a study done abroad. They said Indian engineers are very good at following orders, but they are not creative.
Right.
So your question is valid. That is how it should be. Use any method. Encourage your children to question you and make you feel sorry, you do not know. That makes you read better, come back and explain better.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point. And you shared a very beautiful vision of an ideal school, which is basically run by students, being mentored by teacher. So that would be a wonderful place, but it would need a lot of conviction and probably...
Possible. It's yes, possible. Possible. You know, we have done it. Students have run the school. You know, we didn't have to do anything. The teachers did it. We have had a complete annual day of 1.5 years without one word being spoken. The entire thing was based only on actions.
Oh,
it is possible.
Okay.
And it is possible. We have had assemblies with students being made to do a putty onto their eyes. Understand what a blind person goes through. Wordless assemblies, action. So innovation is not limited to money. We can do that. But the key is how much this principle is willing to shed his ego. Come admission time, it's easier to get an appointment with the prime minister, not with the school principal.
Yeah,
our egos are huge. So can we be humble enough? That's what I always say. How do I define myself? I define myself as an ordinary person with an extraordinary commitment. So can we understand that what we are today and think about it in the right context? That's important.
Yeah, that's a very empowering thought, sir. Having this realization that you have an extraordinary commitment, that is the key to actually, you know, opening all your thoughts and actually implementing, coming up with ways to overcome all the challenges which would be there definitely, and actually creating policies and practices which will have an impact.
Now, I look at the other side. You are an ordinary person. If you start believing it the right way, your ego comes down. We all, you know, there are a lot of people who will come up and say, sir, this is how I hear it. Colonel Shekhar, sir, you are the greatest principal we have seen after Sarvepalli Radhakrishnan. sir, please give me 2 days leave, sir. That's how every school works. So can we move away from that?
Yeah.
So can we understand that we are all people over here? Indira Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Atal Bihari Vajpayee, great leaders have moved on from this world. Mahatma Gandhi, the world is moving on. So we are all these minor specks in this vast ocean of humanity. Let's do our best.
Yeah, we just have a little time to do, to make an impact. You know, we are not always going to be there, but the children we teach are always, you know, they'll carry the legacy. So that is one way to see it, right? So thank you, sir. There is a lot that I would like to discuss. I would wanted to discuss about the ACER report also, but probably, you know, we can have another session. Oh, yeah. Wherein we can talk about all these things. There are several important points that you have shared, both for educators and also parents. And apart from the actionable point, there are these nuggets of wisdom that, you know, you have shared both from your time in the defense and also being a being a principal in the civil sector now. So thank you very much for gracing our little effort to bring more knowledge and more discussions on these aspects of education. So thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, sir, for having me, Kavleen. Thank you. And most importantly, thanks for this initiative for from Credo Learning. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this session. I hope our discussion has been valuable for you with insights and takeaways which you can implement at your end. In case you have queries for Colonel Shekhar, please share with us and do subscribe to our channel, The Learning Circle.